This week in Retronauts, Operation Time Crime. Hello, I'm Stuart Gipp, and yes, that was a reference to what you think it was, and if you got it, you're cool like me, and if you didn't get it, what the heck, you can still be cool. After all, you are listening to the finest retro gaming podcast ever made. Basically pisses on all the others as far as I'm concerned. No, I'm kidding, they're all great. Hi again, I'm Stuart Gipp, and I'm going to do a little rap that I've come up with. I actually did it earlier, sort of off mic, and it's really good, so I'm going to do it again. Is that all right with everyone?
Yeah.
I thought I'd just sort of cringe. I'd sort of do a cringe rap. It'd be fine.
I just said it, and I hoped you would. You
go cringe. I just said cringe. Yeah, that's that. What is that? That's a new word.
Oh, okay. No, it's cringe.
I'm going to do the rap now.
That's our sci-fi swear, you know, from the land that we're from. That's the swear we have here.
Very quiet. This web, it's cringe.
Yeah, it's big chungus, and everyone's like, oh, yeah, we get it. Anyway, moving on. My name's Stuart Gipp, and I'm here to say I'm here with Dave Bulmer and also Shamey.
That's good, isn't
Hello,
it?
Hello, I'm Shamey. I do, or did, I'm not sure what the status is now, very, very long videos. One of them was in Zelda, and now I'm back here talking about Zelda.
It's funny how these things come around.
And my name's Dave, and I did a big song about Ocarina of Time, and that's probably my only real accolade for being here. But I had the game. Don't get me wrong.
I didn't have the game.
I sort of feel like this is just nepotism. I feel like we're both here because we're friends with Stu.
Well, yeah, I think everyone knows that by now.
I mean, it's not like you've exhibited any, like, you know, knowledge or entertainment
friendship
value.
Qualities.
Any qualities whatsoever.
well, you know, we've created a beloved work of seminal criticism with our 5-part coverage of Sonic 3 and Knuckles, and we've done some other episodes which aren't out yet, so that's fun.
Oh, no, my seminal criticism was only for Bayonetta.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. Well done, mate.
Thank you.
Two and a half minutes and we've made the first cum joke. No doubt many more to come. Oh, I did it again. yes, mate. That's what they're here for. Anyway, what's this episode about? You're literally on your knees begging me to explain.
I will not read the titles of the episode, so you're just there begging.
Yeah, I might call the episode Ocarina of Time, kinda. Mm. Anyway... Yeah, Ocarina of Time, Legend of Zelda, one of the most beloved games ever made, often tops the lists of what's the best game that, you know, GamesRadar puts out when they're starving for content, which is all the time. And I thought, hey, you know what? 2025, New Year, well, it was at the time. And I thought, you know what? I've never played most of the 3D Zeldas through. I've played a bit of some of them, but I've never beaten any of them. And I think now is the time that I actually play them to completion so I can offer up an actually useful or maybe valid perspective on them. That's not
to completion. That's another cum joke.
That is another cum joke. We're getting there. We're doing very well with that material. Let's maybe put it on the back burner for now. but we can put, you know, get a little bit of jizz, put a little pin in it. It's not really going to adhere because it's viscous, but whatever.
I don't like this podcast.
You don't like it? I'm really sorry,
no,
man. It's not my fault.
When are they going to talk about Zelda?
It's not my fault. I despise toilet humour. I think it's really lowbrow and not funny. But anyway...
Oh, you'll hate Majora's Mask, then.
Yeah, hey. I've started Majora's Mask, but that's for another podcast. Played through the game recently, got to the very end of it. I did a lot of it on stream on my own Discord, and I came away from it thinking, wow... I've really consistently disliked this, more or less. And then I thought to myself, well, no, this is the thing. This is the thing, okay? Then I got myself to thinking, did the way I approach this game damage my enjoyment of it? And I've come to think, and I've come to believe that, yes, it did, very much so. And I'd like to talk about that. But before we do that, before we get into the more interesting... well, not that your thing won't be interesting. I mean, it'll be fine, I'm sure. Before we get into the nitty-gritty is what I should have said. You know, the nitty-gritty we're always getting into, you know. Yeah. Oh, God, Dave and Shamey and Stu, oh, Christ, they've got into the nitty-gritty again. Call the nitty-gritty, man.
Yep, sound the
klaxon. This is why we have cats.
We should have a special jingle for when we get into nitty gritty. We do it so often.
Yeah, we do. We should have a little nitty gritty jingle. That would be good. If anyone out there wants to make a little nitty gritty jingle for us, by all means, send it in and we'll probably delete it without listening. But I want to ask first, and I'm going to ask Dave first, simply because Hello. His little Discord icon is perpetually lit up and catching my attention. Dave Bulmer, fantastic Dave Bulmer, who I love. What was your Ocarina of Time experience? When did you sort of come to the game and how did you enjoy the game? And tell me about your experience with the game, please.
Well, I get the sense from what you just said that you're... Are you a total newcomer to the game, or had you played it a little bit before?
I played it very well. I own it on the GameCube, the Wii U. I bought it on Wii U. I had it on the 3DS even.
Okay.
And I've got it on the Switch thing, and I keep trying it, and I'll get maybe through the first dungeon, the Deku Tree, you know?
Yeah.
And then I would drop it. I would fall off of it for some reason, but then I thought, no, this year I'm doing it, and I have done it, and I'm going to talk about it, but I want you to talk about your experience first, please.
Well, I played it properly. I played it when it came out on the N64 when it was still the cutting edge. And I'm going to be a little bit hipster about it, but I'll try not to take it too far. But yes, that's when I played it, and that's when it was very, very good. And yes, I can well imagine that playing it since then, it can be a difficult experience. But yeah, that's more or less it. Basically, I played it when it came out. It was not my first Zelda, so having played a couple of them already, I was excited by the concept of it going into 3D, and I followed closely the development of it. Like, leading up to it, there was a lot of information about it, really from the first demo onwards. So it was, might have been one of my first, probably my first experience of really following the development of a game as much as you can, as much as they put out, and really riding the hype train. And I played it, and I loved it. But I will say I didn't finish it, I didn't complete it, until probably the GameCube. But that is because I'm not very good at playing computer games.
That was via the promotional disc, was it? The GameCube version, yeah.
Yes, if you bought Wind Waker when that came out, you got Ocarina of Time on a little disc.
Yes, you know what? I had that as well. So I think I had many, many ways of playing this game before I ever really got around to it. Have you ever revisited the game, or have you just kept it in your head as this kind of excellent experience that you...
Well, if that counts as revisiting it, because I did, having played it through on the N64, I played it through on the GameCube. But then, of course, I played it through on the 3DS and I did complete it on that. But that's sort of different, isn't it? That's a remake rather than...
Well, I haven't really played that version much, but I've heard sort of mixed things. Maybe we can talk about it a bit later on. But
so that's me. That's who I am and how I played it.
And
I ought to say, then I probably my most well-known internet thing I ever did was Ocarina of Time with lyrics on YouTube, which was a big medley what I made with my friend Brental Floss of all the music in Ocarina that I wanted to sing with my voice all layered. When you're not listening to this, go and listen to that. I won't harp on about it.
We'll probably play at least a snatch of it.
Yeah, probably, but it's quite long. You'll have to pick a bit.
Stop before you say something you might regret.
Hello, Dave.
Don't diss Ocarina on the internet.
Or what?
Think what frightening fanboys you provoke. They don't know you're otherwise a decent bloke.
Yeah, we will. We'll pick a good bit. I'm sure that the editors will pick an excellent bit. They're very good at that. But Shame, let's. I'd like to ask the same question of you. I had some air in my throat.
It takes me back to my childhood growing up in Compton. And I went down to the local electronics boutique. And I went in there and I just got in a GameCube, and there on the shelf was Wind Waker. And I'd played Link's Awakening back on the Game Boy. And I was like, oh, Zelda, I recognize that. Yeah, okay, let's get that. And it came with Ocarina of Time.
Straight out of Compton. Crazy motherfucker named Shane May goes to EB to get a game he can play. Carry on.
Stu, you're on fire today, man.
I know, I'm spitting bars.
Also, I'm realizing that my name rhymes with so many things.
Yeah, it does. It's unfortunate, isn't it? try to play a note, and it's probably Ocarina. Sorry, go on.
But I went in, got Wind Waker, came out. I played Wind Waker up until the Forsaken Fortress, which was this extended kind of stealth section combined with like 3D navigation. I don't want to say puzzle, but it's like a 3D navigation task.
Yeah. With limited camera options as well, if memory serves.
And so I packed that in quick smart and went over to try Ocarina of Time, and I was absolutely enchanted from the word go, even though it was by that point a lot more primitive. I had no perspective. Like, I barely knew anything about anything to do with video games, like, at that point, because I'd just gotten my GameCube. I was just beginning to buy magazines and stuff.
Yeah.
So I knew that this game was older, but I had no idea that this was considered like the highest rated game of all time. I had no idea its legacy or what it was. It was just, oh, cool, free wee bonus game.
Yeah, so to you, it was just an additional, like, just a game. It was just a game.
Yeah.
No preconceptions of it.
But the power of that game was such that I ended up playing that and loving that a lot more than Wind Waker. It ended up being the main event for me.
Did you play, this is slightly tangential, but did you play it through with a guide, or did you like refer to a guide, or did you just puzzle it out yourself?
No, it was, I think I had to refer to a guide a couple of times during like Stumpers. I don't think I completed it all like in that first sitting. I think it was like maybe a year or two before I got into completing it.
Yeah.
But there were I remember, of course, the classic experience. We got stuck in the water temple, and that's when we put it down. And then it was years later, it was me and my friend basically pulled an all-nighter getting through the water temple and puzzling it out. So that was a very fond memory.
Yeah.
But I think the big part that I needed to get, because at that point, getting on the internet was a little bit of a chore.
Yeah.
Like, it was something I had to commit myself to. And then when I was on the internet, I was distracted and I didn't really want to look up guides, and I didn't have any paper guides.
Yeah.
So I didn't really use guides, but it did take me a lot of years to finally complete.
I only ask that out of curiosity, because you came to it in a different way to Dave. You didn't have that preconception of, oh, here we go, this is fucking Ocarina, let's go, you know. And that's interesting, because if I'm going to talk on, I'm going to drone on for a bit now, with apologies to the listeners, and to you, of course, my delighted guests. I played this game with so much baggage. Like, it's impossible to play this game now without that baggage of, hey, everyone thinks this is the best game of all time. We'll see about that. You know, we'll see about that. And what it is, it's held up really as a game that it has been written about as has this aged poorly, because I do not ascribe to the theory that games age poorly. I do not like that. I think that is unreasonable criticism, because if a game doesn't include a quality of life feature that is later commonplace, that's not the game aging poorly. That's just change. That's just a different thing.
Yeah.
So I went into Ocarina like, what is the best way I can play this? And I was, you know, heartily recommended and aware of the Ship of Harkinnion decompilation, I believe it is, or a recompilation, which basically ports the game to Windows, to PCs, so you can play it natively without sort of emulation, so to speak. I mean, it is emulation, but you get what I mean by this. There was very recently the very famous Sonic Unleashed decompilation, with which I played the entire game on PC to completion for the first time, and it was fucking shit, by the way. But that's a bit harsh, but not really. It really was fucking shit. But Ocarina of Time, I'm going in like, I want to make this absolutely perfect, because this is going to be my one playthrough of this. So I'd already had a USB N64 controller, because I love the N64 controller. I have no issues with that controller whatsoever. And there's no way I'm playing that game with all of the C stick instead of C buttons. It's ridiculous. I cannot handle that. On the GameCube, perhaps, where the C stick is very small and precise, that's not so much of a problem for me. When I'm using a straight up right analog on, for example, an Xbox Series, using that is an ordeal to do like the right stick stuff. It's an ordeal.
I thought the GameCube had a really elegant solution to it, which was just to put the C buttons on X, Y, and Z.
That is very elegant, I would say. Yeah, in fact, I didn't realize it did do that. I thought it would be on the C stick, but if it's not,
well,
that's
even better. It is as well.
It's optional. I see. Okay.
Yeah.
But so I came into this, and I'm like, right, Ship of Harkinnion, 60 frames per second. Turn on a few fixes, nothing that will actually change the gameplay. All I want is this game at high res, at high frame rate. 144 frames, I think I played it actually. And I'm using the N64 controller. And initially, I'm like, okay, this is great. This is fantastic. I like this. I think the whole opening of that game is brilliant. Right the way through the Deku Tree. I think the Deku Tree is an outstanding piece of dungeon design. And I was told by regular listener Peripheral, hi, by the way, that was like the last thing that they designed in the game was that really? First dungeon. Yes, which explains why it's so polished and so well designed and so aware. And I love that. I love going through that. I love the fight with Goma. I love the way you initiate the fight with Goma. I think that's very, very clever. The way that you have to find him by looking around and then you spot him and he clocks you. It's very good. It's good drama. And I was loving it, like, initially until... the thing is, I can't really pinpoint exactly where it started to go south for me, because as soon as the game jumps up in complexity at all, I started rubbing up against it and chafing with it. And
I find that with so many... Like, that's me and any game. I love the start of so many games, and then as soon as it's like, and now here's a load of other things you've got to do, I check out often. So yeah, I can get behind that.
I sort of thought to myself, is it because I like to be guided? Because there's a lot of times in that game where I feel like you really don't have clues as to where you're supposed to go, and the impulse is go and explore, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But the Hyrule Field is just, it's quite big. And it only has... first of all, it's rather big, which is excellent. No, I'll stop. Little bean reference for you there. And
well done.
There's only about five things on it. There's like a few locations, and to get to them, you're just kind of walking across the field. And now, here's the bit where everyone hates me. Because I didn't want to use a guide, because I wanted to do it myself. I wanted to solve the game under my own power, which I was very convinced I could do.
Mm-hmm.
I never got the fucking horse.
Oh, wow.
I never got Epona. I got to the top. I finished the game without the horse because I didn't know how to get the horse. I didn't even know how to begin to get the horse. Here's the thing. Here's what I think I did wrong. And this is the crux of this whole thing for me, and it's what I'd like to talk about, really. I think I screwed up my chances of liking this game by playing it through the Ship of Harkinian PC port because of the following reasons, which might sound mad, but I hope they don't.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Ocarina of Time is old, and it's a bit creaky. Because it's old, that's what old games can be like, especially 3D ones.
Yep.
And by setting myself the task of, right, N64 controller in my hand, right? When I play an N64 game, I expect N64 performance, and I expect N64 visuals. And what I'm doing is I'm playing a game that's old in design and a little bit labored in design. And that's not, I don't mean that in a bad way, I just mean that's how it is.
Yep.
Yet I'm playing it at high frame rate with high-res HD graphics, and that doesn't work.
You're speaking
those
the language,
things
here, Stu.
Don't fit together.
I completely agree with this.
I've talked about this on Video World before, which is my old YouTube show. Look it up, it's crap. And if the game's visuals do not match the game's gameplay, there is an immediate disconnect for me. And I think I should have just played the original game on a ROM or something. Because then I would have been like, okay, it's 20 frames per second with drops. It looks blurry. It looks like this, but it also feels like that. And when those two things would have come together, I think I would have had a better time. I would have been more forgiving of the moments when the camera went all crazy or I felt like the controls weren't responding to me the way I wanted them to. Or the puzzles were obtuse, because there are some obtuse things in this game. I would have just thought, yes. I'm playing an old game. I'm fine with this. This is what I signed up for. So
I always think this, to get ready for this, I reminded myself of Ocarina by watching some videos, and people, you know, doing like intelligent reviews of the game are using clips that are high res and 60 FPS or whatever. And I was looking at it and going like, well, this game looks disgusting, but I remember it being beautiful. And it's because you're not supposed to look at those textures at that resolution. And
no.
You're not supposed to look at it like that.
Well, it's. I came to it and I just find myself thinking, this isn't for new players. This is for people who've already played this game and they love this game and they want to play it again in a way that's a bit different and a bit slicker, because they already are aware of the things that are more obstinate about it, and they can deal with it. Like, were I to play this game again, I think I'd have a great time. I think I'd enjoy myself because I would already know how to deal with the stuff that I didn't like, if that makes sense. So for me, it's a replay game, and I do intend to replay it at some point. But ultimately, what I want to get across here about my own personal enjoyment of the game is I didn't enjoy myself for about 2/3 of it, basically, and I was forcing myself through it. And I regret it because I should have just played the original game, and I probably shouldn't have played it on stream, because that is obviously going to affect your experience.
That was something
as well.
I wanted to bring up as well, is because you played it with, and I say this affectionately, like, you played this with a peanut gallery, you know?
And it is.
For me, one of Ocarina's great, great strengths is the strength of its atmosphere and its pacing. And I think it is difficult to kind of drink in the, okay, this is a kind of, I'm going to say these words, and I know that somebody is going to object, but it really, if it's something that I can't really explain, it's just something you either feel or you don't, right? Yeah. And if you don't feel it, there is no way I'm going to be able to explain it to you.
It's a certain je ne sais quinge. Sorry, go on.
But a lot of the magic of that game is just existing in these spaces and drinking in the atmosphere.
Yeah.
And that is, like, for me, a lot of the time when I was playing it, I was doing it with a friend who is similarly enthralled. And that only added to it. But if you are playing that with a bunch of people who either don't care about Ocarina or are so familiar with Ocarina that a lot of this magic has become kind of crusty and faded, like me. Like, I don't quite get the same feeling going back to it nowadays because I know Hyrule Field like the back of my hand. You are, I think, going to diminish your chances of that atmosphere landing for you.
I think that even without the stream element, I think what you've said comes into play from just the general community around the game as well, but on obviously on a less direct level. Because I mentioned earlier when I went in with the baggage, it's that impulse to be like, wait, every single time there was something in the game that I didn't like or I thought was poorly designed, and I'm sorry, but there were some things. I don't really want to get too specific because I don't want to create the impression that I actively think it's a bad game, because I don't. I think that would be an insane thing to say. It's one of those things where it's all on me, it's my problem, more or less, but then sometimes it's not. And every time that happens, I'm thinking to myself, oh, this is the best game ever made, is it? You know, this is the best game of all time, is it? Well, how come this camera is so bad then? You know, how come this is so awkward? And then you've got to psychologically pry yourself out of that and put yourself in the position of, right, this is just me and the game. That's all there is here. Nothing else matters. This is fresh. And I think it's fundamentally impossible to do that with a game like Ocarina, and that sucks. It's a shame.
Do you know, I experienced that. Sorry, this is going to be a bit of a tangent, but experienced
it's fine.
We
do loads of tangents here.
I experienced that exact same thing recently with Outer Wilds. And I thought that game was really good. I thought that game was magnificent. If you haven't played it, Dave, I think you would enjoy it, man. I think that would be up your alley.
I started it and I had I've got the measure of it and I'm going to play it all the way through, because I started it and the thing happened to me that happens to people where I'm like, well, the controls on this are janky, and I kind of stopped playing it. But then, for whatever reason, Abby, that's my wife, listeners, she got even more frustrated with it than I did. But I'd heard, like, that it was the sort of thing she personally would really like, so I kind of urged her to push through, and she had one, like, tearful night of frustration with it. And then, suddenly, it became just one of the most transcendent experiences she's ever had. All, she was obsessed right through to the end, so I can't wait to play it properly.
I've played that as well, and I had a... So early on, as soon as I had received how the controls work in the ship and how you how it actually feels to play, I was like, I'm chucking this because I cannot play this without just hating the controls. I need to get myself into a headspace where I'm capable of not whinging about it, if that makes sense. I needed to be reasonable, and I knew I couldn't be reasonable, so I had to walk away. I'm the same with Blue Prince. I played Blue Prince for literally 5 minutes, and I just went, absolutely fucking not. This is not a Stuart Gyp game. Off.
Anyway, come back in 2029 for the Retronauts on Outer Wilds.
About how it's the best game ever, yeah.
But, I'll be there.
But this is the thing. Is so many people were like, this is the best game ever. This is so good. This is absolutely the best game ever. And what it meant was, when there were little flubs or irritations... I had to make an active effort not to be petulant. And maybe that says more about me than the game. But like, there was one puzzle in particular that is very, very specific and fiddly. And if you fail it, there's like a time, an upper time limit on it and a lower time limit to reach it. So if you miss your window, you're going to have to go back and start again, and then wait like 10 minutes for this thing to happen again. And while I was doing it, I was like, this is fucking shit. This is so annoying. This is so irritating. Why is it like this? And there's a very good reason why it's like this. There's no other way it could have worked. And it was absolutely worth it once I got to it. But it was like exactly like you say, Stu. It was like, oh, this is the best game ever, is it? This is, you know, this is the...
Oh, this is your... I just keep thinking of that Stuart Lee bit where he looks at the camera and just contemptuously says, that's what you like.
Because it's funny because I was talking to somebody... I was talking to somebody for whom that is one of their favourite games, and he was very self-conscious about the idea that everybody gassing it up so much would have that effect on people because he's been there himself, you know?
The Disco Elysium effect.
Yes, yes. And I haven't played Disco Elysium because everybody told me it was the greatest thing ever. And then I got to the opening narration and
best
I was like...
Best written game ever.
Like, I know Dave thinks this, right? And then I got to the opening narration and I said out loud, oh, shut up, and turned it off.
It's interesting, isn't it, though? I think the genius creatives of TV tropes call this hyperversion. And, you know, along with all the other brilliant insights that they offer on TV tropes, like when, you know, when they say, like, oh, this trope is averted because it doesn't happen. And don't write it down then, idiot!
No, but it is. It's a thing that... It's a thing that we have. I don't know if everyone has it, because the subset of people that I've examined is just nerds. So it might be just the thing nerds have. We will not be told. Like, if we don't discover something ourselves, we just won't do it. Now, Ocarina, though, is different than Outer Wilds or Disco Elysium, because both of those games are a great example of... They're a great example of a technique, because both of those games... They deliberately put in your way It's a little bit like those Nigerian prince scams, where the thing in the way is like, yeah, this is badly written and nobody would believe it. And the people who push through
I could use $2 million.
The people who push through that, they're the marks. Well, yeah. Both of these games, they go like, okay, we're going to put some unusual barriers in the way of players. And if they can prove themselves by sticking with... we are going to reward them with so much joy and wonder in their lives that they're never going to forget it.
I love that you've brought this up because I love things like this usually. That's the problem. Mm. I like it when something, a piece of media, puts up a lip. See, now I'm at... this is gatekeeping. This is what would be called gatekeeping because there is a degree to which, and I hate saying it, but I think there is a degree to which sometimes you should gatekeep. And not necessarily just say, no, you can't play this because you are in this category or whatever. But when a game puts up a wall and says, like, you know what, this is a difficulty spike, for example, early in the game to say, look, if you don't get this, if you can't crack this, this probably isn't for you.
Oh, well, another example, Ori and the Blind Forest.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant game, but there's a bit in it, a couple of levels in, where... you have to... oh, I flipping love it. But there's a bit a few levels in where you have to do a... it's not a boss fight, but it's an environment boss, where essentially you have to master the moves to get up a really difficult spiky shaft. And loads of people stop playing there. And if you don't, now you're in the game. And it's so good.
I mean, think things like Sekiro, the first boss fight in Sekiro, or... Sekiro is full of it, but... I don't think Ocarina itself has...
you're full of it.
Oh, come on, mate. What are you talking about? Oh, my God. This guy never stops.
Got you.
Oh, mate. I don't know. I don't know if I can go on now, but I'm going to. I don't think Ocarina has a defined point for me where I stopped. This is the problem, where I stopped and I thought, okay, this is the wall. Like,
no, I'm saying, the reason I brought that up is... Ocarina isn't one of those games. The games we've been talking about are ones where they deliberately put something in your way and say, get through this and we'll reward you. Ocarina of Time, the barrier is literally just when it came out. Everything that's good about Ocarina of Time not only do I just remember playing this just because I'm that sort of person, but just randomly, it so happens that a thing on my podcast... is that we read my teenage diary from 26 years ago, and we happen to have just got to the bit where I get Ocarina of Time. So
this is pretty convenient.
Yeah, so I've been reading what my impression of the game was at the time, and my impression of the game at the time is that it's just a miracle.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everything about it was so incredible to me because of what had come before. But now when I play it, it's just like, yeah, this is a pretty basic 3D game.
So, but when it was out, I mean, like, I can't put myself back there because I can't account for possible exceptions. But the idea I have is, like, 3D adventure games didn't have any of this. The real-time combat combined with this level of exploration and this level of freedom.
Oh, there was nothing even remotely like it. I mean, so I can give you a couple of insights. Like, I can talk a little bit about it.
I kind of want to just kind of like finish off a thought earlier.
Yeah, sorry, of course.
We interrupted you again.
No. You were saying about how Disco Elysium and Outer Wilds and games like that, like, put something in your way, and if you manage to transcend it, you are in, and then you're part of the cult.
And I want to make it clear real quick that I'm not saying either of those games are bad at all. I'm just using them as examples for this particular thing.
I adored Outer Wilds. I haven't played Disco Elysium, and I will.
Yeah.
I want to be in the cult.
Mm.
I want to give all my money to L. Ron Hubbard.
But it's lovely in there.
But Ocarina is one of the earliest examples, I think, of Nintendo conveyance, where it's just like there is no man left behind. It is very, very... like, the Deku Tree, for instance. The thing is, I keep calling it The Outer Wilds, and I got a row for that because it's just called Outer Wilds. And then I said... I tried to say The Deku Tree, and then I went, no, it's just Deku Tree.
Oh, get lost.
I just...
no, it's The Deku Tree. Shut up, fans.
It is The Deku Tree. It's just my brain's got its wires crossed. When you're in The Deku Tree, that whole dungeon is basically Okay, so here's how a 3D perspective works.
Yes.
Can you look up? Well done.
Yeah. Yep.
Can you look down? Well done. You know, like, it is that. It is, like, really, really... And it disguises it so well. Like, Nintendo's polish is like nothing else. There are no other developers, I think, that come close to just how easy Nintendo games are to play for the first time.
Yeah.
And Ocarina of Time, I think, is just one of the standout examples. It might be the standout example of, like, Nintendo starting to do this, to starting to prize conveyance above all else.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Because, you know, previously in, like, Mario 64, it's a bit clunky. The way that they approached the same thing was to try and make it all, like, in-universe. You know, the camera was Lakitu holding a camera.
Mm-hmm. And that's a great example. But, like, also Mario 64's version of that was basically just muck about in Princess Peach's garden for a while.
So that's... Yeah, so this is the thing. What I remember and what I've sort of found out from looking at the diary about why Zelda 64 hit so hard... Is, Stu, you were saying a minute ago about how that the field is too big. And of course, well, if you do have the horse, it isn't.
Yeah,
but
But I'm not anxious about it really so much to say. But when I say this stuff, I just want to make it so clear and pointed that I'm coming at this from a. Like, the field isn't too big. The field is exactly the right size. The field is full of stuff. But it's not now. At it now, it's just different. I am almost anxious to criticize the game extensively because it is so beloved, and I don't want to do a thing where the episode is like, hey, you know, a thing that you like, that's a load of old shite.
Nah, man, because like Eagle Raptor did it, and his career went without a hitch.
Oh yeah, I forgot about him. I liked it, that brief moment when I forgot about Egoraptor. Nothing against Egoraptor. Well, a few things.
This isn't the that
I like it.
That was a little joke. That was a little gag.
It was a good one.
This field, right? The thing that was good about the field wasn't how much or how little that was in it. It was something we can almost not even grasp now. It was that you could see it. Like, the draw distance was the thing about the field. To see the field at all in 1997.
Death Mountain in the... You see that mountain? You can climb it.
Well, yeah, kind of. That's what it felt like. So the way that I wrote about it in my diary... was hyperbolic and isn't quite true, but it gives you an insight of to how it felt, which was that I start talking about a living world, not a game. I start talking about if you drop a pebble in the river, you can watch it go down the river, and sometime later it'll wash up on a shore somewhere. That's not true. If you go to the village, you'll meet some people, but when you move away from them, they'll live their own lives anyway, and later you'll bump into them and things will have changed and will happen to them. They'll say something different. And essentially, what I thought Ocarina was when I first encountered it, the impression that it gave originally, is actually what Shenmue was later. This idea of just like creating a little living world. And of course, we've moved past that now. And that doesn't feel as incredible as it did at the time either. But it was one of those. That is a big part of why Ocarina is always on those, at the top of the list of games ever. It's just because like, we just had never experienced anything like it. It was like going from games to reality with a storyline or something.
What seems now like an egregious throwback, it's like the formative... You know what I'm going to compare it to? Okay, this is going to be good. You'll like this. You know how they've redesigned Donkey Kong?
Yes.
And it's way better than the old design.
Yep.
In almost every respect. And it's people so much are very better. Cross about it. And it's yeah. like, okay, what you're looking at here with the original design of Donkey Kong, which is a character I love, and I have enjoyed almost every single Donkey Kong game that has featured that version of Donkey Kong, okay? Yeah. That design, it was beholden to the limitations imposed from using one of the very first computers that could do that.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And Ocarina of Time is the absolute best version of what they could do then, in my opinion. But
yes. And kind of more. That was what was so impressive about it.
Yeah. The new Donkey Kong is the best... The elements of that design that worked... but massively polished and improved to look more like a living, real cartoon thing, which is, of course, what happened to some extent with Wind Waker. And that's what I'm playing now. And you know what? I've got problems with that game as well. But my God, am I enjoying it more than I enjoyed Ocarina of Time. Just one game, like, well, not one game. Majora obviously came in, and I'm not going to discount Majora's Mask because I will be playing that. Once it's more feasible that I can do so. But from Ocarina to Wind Waker, for me personally, and admittedly, I'm using the Wii U version, which I know has been spruced up, so that's going to influence it. But for me, don't start doing that noise. No, do not make whirr noises at me, okay? I am, but he's doing it more. He's a very defiant, aren't you, Dave?
Wind Waker 3D is like if you took... No, that was going to be too niche.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, we can still do it. I couldn't care less if it's niche.
I was going to say, if you took Nigel Kitching artwork and used CG to apply really 3D colouring on it.
Okay, yeah, that would be cool.
It should be done like.
Okay, I do respect that, but...
Well, it's kind of like issue 125 of Sonic the Comic when Richard Elson was getting to grips with digital colouring.
See, now there you go. See, Shame knows how to make it more broadly applicable.
Yeah, everyone knows that. Mate.
Now, with...
Listeners, that was very much a private conversation.
That's fine. But the point is, going from Ocarina to Wind Waker, for me, even one generation later, I find it exponentially more playable. And that's the point. The point I'm trying to make here is that doesn't mean, obviously, that Ocarina is bad. It doesn't mean, oh, this is worse, this is the new thing, this is better. It just means that time watches on. And I wouldn't want to say... I want to make the distinction between this game has aged badly and this and the point I'm trying to make, which I'm really scrabbling for here, but I think you get what I'm talking about. It's like games change, perspectives change, perception of games change, expectations of games change.
Yes, absolutely. And we literally cannot go back in time and put ourselves in that headspace again. Yeah, I cannot now, like, unlearn what games are like now. You know? And it's like, so at that moment, Ocarina of Time, because I remember apparently Miyamoto had a lot of misgivings about whether or not they would even be able to make a map that size on the N64. The original plan was to have it adopt Mario 64's structure. You would go into Ganon's castle and enter paintings to go to different levels. Like, because they didn't know if they could make Hyrule Field at all. So this really was bleeding edge.
Yeah.
At the time. Yeah. And it really was an absolutely magnificent impact walking out there and hearing. And like going, oh my God, I can actually explore all of this. This is actually Hyrule.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was an incredible feeling. But now you've got Breath of the Wild, which is like Hyrule Field from Ocarina of Time fits into that, like, what, 1,000 times over?
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's difficult to go back. But I do want to stress that I think independently of the technology, which was being put to use to create this new experience and this new fantasy and this new story, I think Ocarina of Time just has the chops when it comes to, like, pacing and structure and everything. And I think, again, a lot of that is now lost on a modern audience, because it has been talked to fucking death by people like me. Like, the moment that I always the moment that I always think of, that I think is possibly one of the greatest moments in any game that I've ever played, is when you finally get through Jabu Jabu's belly. You're excited to assemble the three stones and finally see what is beyond the door of time. You get there, you find the Master Sword, Ganon appears. Oh, actually, I wanted you to do this the whole time. Ah, you've given me exactly what I wanted. You played right into my hands. And then the 7-year time skip, and you walk outside, and the bustling Hyrule castle town is just filled with these, like, morose zombies.
And screaming zombies, yeah.
Exactly, the re-deads. And if you kill one of them, all of the re-deads, like, awkwardly shuffle over and mourn the corpse. And for that moment, you think these are the citizens of Castletown. And, okay, to be fair, the game does retract that threat. But in that moment, what you have got is absolutely perfect perspective on the conflict of this game. Because most games, you know, do one or the other. But in this moment, you have got both. You understand, like, what you're trying to prevent Hyrule from becoming.
Yeah.
And you've also seen what it is before, what it was before, you know? And it's like, I think that is such an effective moment, and it's so condensed and so slight and so elegant and so perfect. I love that moment so much. But now I have explained all of that to you. If you haven't played Ocarina of Time, you're now going to be expecting that to happen, and it's going to have absolutely zero impact.
For the record, that I did like that segment of the game a lot. I think that the cutscenes in general in this game are extremely good. I think the character design and the boss design, well, maybe not some of the fights, but the actual designs of the bosses are generally very good. And there were a lot of moments where I thought, yes, I like this. And I do want to revisit it, because I want to see the secrets, because I know that, I mean, I didn't even get the friggin' horse, you know? There is so much of this game that I didn't see, because I was guiding myself through it, or being guided through it, or being advised what to do. And I should have just gone in and done it myself, I think. Which is something I plan to do for the later ones, or I'm trying to do for the later ones. But,
well, that is,
I mean,
like,
the sticking points for me, one of the, something I've got to mention for me is one of the major sticking points I had with this game. And it's very early in the game, and I think it's quite laughable, so I expect to be mocked for it. But there is a point in the game very early on where the only way to progress is you need to stand on a certain part of the ground in Goron Mountain, or Goron Death Mountain, and you have to play Zelda's Lullaby, I believe, or the song, one of the songs.
Sorry, was it to get Darunia to dance?
No, it's when you're outside the door, it's not even open, and you have to play it to open the door.
Oh, right. Yes.
And I could not, for love nor money, figure that out, because what they say is you have maybe, like, we don't even know who you are. You have no evidence, like, for who you are. We're not opening it. And I never made the connection that if I played that song, they would be like, oh, the princess has sent you here, or you are from Hyrule Castle. That connection never occurred to me, ever.
Because it doesn't
would have.
How would the Gorons have known Zelda's Lullaby, you know? Yeah. Like,
and that I mean, maybe there's a guy who says, hey, what if you stood there and played the song? But I don't think there is. There's a guy who says, how do we know who you are? How can we trust you? And I would never have made that connection ever in a month of Sundays. That's right. A month of Sundays. A full month consisting only of Sundays. And I would never have figured that out.
Well, for me, that moment was... And this is kind of the flip side of the coin that I was talking about just there, is I am now so familiar with that game, and I'm so familiar with the language that it uses to try and nudge you into solutions. Like, I have a story. I remember I had a flatmate, and she was playing through Ocarina of Time for the first time.
Yeah.
And she put it down after the Deku Tree, because it was in the bit where 23 is number one. It was the bit where there are like three Deku Scrubs and you've got to hit them in the order of middle, right, yeah, left. 2, 3, 1. 23 is number one, which made more sense in Japanese, I think, because it was supposed to be Ni-san is Ichiban. So it's like Ni-san meaning like, you know, two, older, yeah, brother, but also 2, 3.
A pun, more anyway, of a pun, but a better pun, basically.
Yeah, yeah. But her problem with it was she didn't automatically go left to right, 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
You know, and again, that's just something I can't tell you if I had any trouble with that puzzle.
Well, I mean, I know I didn't. I got that. But the thing is, it's another part of this game, which is, and the whole perspective towards it is, I think, okay, give me a Mario game. Give me New Super Mario Brothers, any of the New Super Mario Brothers. And I have a sixth sense for where hidden things are in those games. I know the language of those games back to front. I can look at a screen and go, that's a fake wall. Because I know the language of those games back to front. Put me in front of a 3D Zelda. I don't know the rules. I don't know the language. And there is stuff in that game I struggled with that I think was received as, how in God's name have you not figured this out? You know, well, I'm not stupid.
I jumped into a couple of those streams myself, and there were a few times that it was like, I was sitting there, like, kind of holding my own tongue, because I knew, yeah, I know the solution, of course I know the solution, because I've played this game fucking 800 million times.
Yeah.
But it is, I do think we forget how obtuse it can be sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, I think that people, you can be Zelda coded, so to speak, and you can take a puzzle from a Zelda game and you can sit back and think, this is the right approach. Because there are times, obviously, where I will get stuck in a puzzle in a game and I will be like, this is impossible. I don't understand how anyone can figure this out. I'll walk away from the game. I'll come back an hour later and I'll be like, oh yeah, it's really easy and it's obvious. It's been staring me in the face the whole time. And that happens with Ocarina of Time. But having played it in a position where I was compelled to go forward, where I didn't want to stop and admit defeat and say, I can't figure this out right now.
Yes. Well, this is, I actually have a rule against streaming a game that I'm playing for the first time.
Yeah.
Exactly because of that. Because, yeah, it, well, number one, it divides your attention so much between the game and the commentary and the chat.
Yeah.
But number two is that, like, I was going to say I say this with love, but no, I don't. You guys need to get a lid on this. Nerds cannot resist the opportunity to tell you that they know something.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah.
Some of them even record, like, themselves speaking about things and put them out on the internet for money.
No, but that thing of when they don't want to spoil it for you, but they need to communicate they know it, so they'll say it in a little jokey, veiled way that you won't understand the reference, but you do, because you're not an idiot.
It's like when I would go to Marvel movies back when they weren't dog shit. And look, fucking face it, it's dead, okay? The MCU's fucking shite now, just drop it. Anyway, I would go to Marvel movies, and I promise you I'm not making this up. Whenever there would be something in the movie that was like maybe a sly reference to something in the comics, which did happen, you would get a guy going, ha, ha. Yeah. And it was always like that. It was a fake laugh.
Yeah.
But, and the only reason they would do that is because it's like, you're in an audience of complete strangers. None of them are going to interact with you after this, and none of them have before. But you still want them to know that you understood that reference.
I've done it. I've done it, and it feels
I'm
bad
sure
when I do
I've
it.
Done it.
Yeah.
But that's a tangential, but it's also not, because I don't want it to get into like, oh, is this whole podcast just Stu talking about his stream? Because it's not meant to be that.
There's something I've been looking for an end to say, which is that a wonderful thing about like the video games as a thing have. Do I mean wonderful? It's kind of bad, but it's sort of impressive. Is that games are now at the point where literature was when we were kids, where we had books we wanted to enjoy and we were enjoying them. And there was always these old guys hovering at the periphery going like, oh yes, but of course you simply must read Silas Marner or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they made you because it was school and you read the books and you were like, oh, I can't penetrate this. This just doesn't. One that always trips me over is that thanks to a couple of prominent adaptations in my young childhood, I have always wanted to read Gulliver's Travels properly. And I keep
buying... Oh, yeah, it's the one about that big fella, isn't it?
The big fella.
He's the big, but there's a lot of little fellas. He's normal size, isn't he?
It's that at the start, he washes up on the shore. I think he's a ship surgeon. Ship's in a storm. He washes up on the shore, and he wakes up. And he's been tied down on the beach by loads of tiny little guys. And yes, it's just that he's from a place where the perspective is... He's in a place where the perspective is different. But here's the thing. I bought the book again recently, going like, why do I never succeed in reading this? It's because all of that, like everything anyone knows about Gulliver's Travels, from the storm to the beach and all the little guys, all that is all one paragraph of the book.
Oh my God.
And it goes on for like 10 pages, this paragraph, and it's completely impenetrable and very boring, despite the interesting things happening.
The thing is, Gulliver's Travels is like, what it is it is this extremely specific satire of the Parliament at a specific time that is also completely impenetrable to everybody. I did Gulliver's Travels in university, and most of that section of the course was basically just going, we don't actually know what this means.
Oh,
we don't know who he's
really
referring to here.
Oh my God,
I don't get this
bit. Even know.
But there is a bit, if you stick
that's
with
like,
it... There
so it's like reading like Doonesbury from the 70s or something.
And this is the thing. If you stick with it, Dave, there is a bit in the third book where somebody explodes a dog by sticking some bellows up its arse. It is incredible.
Jesus. Well, then I will. But my point is, we are entering a time when video games have the same problem. Ocarina of Time has that problem. You have to know so much about
that. To me, that's fascinating, because I've never considered that before.
Do you know what I mean? You've got to know so much about what the state of games was. The fact that for a lot of people, this would be their first 3D game. Not that many people, because we had the PlayStation for years, but like it was in that world. This was one of the ways of saying, you know, this thing that we want to do, games in 3D. Well, how about doing them like this? And this is one of the games that everyone responded to and went, oh, yes, this. And all games since then have been based on that. And so it all feels kind of dull to us now, because everything in it has been iterated on. Okay. Breath of the Wild does everything this one does better.
if
the thumbnail of this video is not Link being tied down by the Picore, I will riot.
I thought you were going to say Link putting a bellows up a dog's ass.
Very unfortunately, this is not going to be a video, but we can... And I've got I've got Leanne to do the art, but I didn't specify it should be a BDSM like link.
Sorry,
thing,
the YouTube brain kicked in for a moment there.
No, it's fine. I didn't mean that to dig at you. I just thought I'd do a little humorous aside.
But it is worth mentioning that a lot of the things we're talking about were fixed by the 3DS version of this game. And that's the point, and that's what the 3DS version is. It's like...
But then the people go, the older heads look at the fixes and go, no!
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm an old head, and I didn't. I loved it.
Okay, the 3DS version of Ocarina of Time for me has one very, very minor little blemish. Not even a blemish, a smudge.
Yeah.
And that is that... I don't think they should have had the big dancing, shouting stone in the Temple of Time. I think they should have put it outside. Otherwise, that is immaculate. That is such a great modernization effort while still leaving the core of the whole thing intact. Like, the fact that the water temple is now intelligible is not a flaw.
Yeah, it's brilliant. So what the 3DS version did, and even there... you know, that's now so old. Who's got a 3DS? And of course, we all emulate it. Now, look, I know some people don't like this aspect. It's built for 3D. You are supposed to play this game in 3D. And if you don't like that, perhaps you simply won't enjoy this version of the game. But it takes... what everyone said at the time when it came out is, yeah, this just looks like Ocarina of Time. And then we looked at Ocarina of Time and we amended it to, this is what we remembered Ocarina of Time looking like, and we were wrong. That's the point of that version of the game.
Dave, can I say something that you're really not going to like?
Of course.
It's actually been longer now since the release of Ocarina of Time 3D than Ocarina of Time was when 3D came out.
I don't like it, but it doesn't surprise me.
I'd like to also register my dislike of that particular comment.
Yeah, but it doesn't surprise me. Like, and I don't know what, you know, maybe it's time to modernize it again and bring it out on the Switch, but I don't think it would survive that. Because we have Breath of the Wild now.
It's already on Switch.
It is, yeah.
What, the 3DS version?
No, the original just the original is on the Switch expansion pass service.
Which, to be honest with you, I have to be honest with you, I like that. I like that Nintendo, despite the fact that they update these games sometimes with remakes, they always make sure to preserve the originals.
Absolutely.
Yes. I do like that.
I like that we're getting the original Wind Waker on the GameCube Switch, which too, you know, that's really cool as well.
Finally. But
something I really want to say before I forget, if that's okay, and it does tie back to the literature thing, is... I honestly think that's a fantastic point. I'm really, really chuffed with that. I might start parroting that, actually. But the thing with this stuff and this old literature and these old games is I love old games. And when I get to something inscrutable or when I find a genre I don't like, what I want is I want that moment where you get it. Mm. And for me, that never happened. Going back to literature, I studied... we read The Dubliners, James Joyce, The Dubliners, in school.
Uh-huh.
And I found 9/10 of that book. I didn't know what the fuck was going on. Okay? And there's a story in that book called Ivy Day in the Committee Room, which is a satire entirely about Irish politics from the era in which it came out. I don't know what it was because I'm not very educated on that respect. But for whatever reason, the emotion in the story and the point of the story landed like a depth charge when I read that. And it's the shortest one in the book. It's about 6 pages, I think. And the ending of that is utterly devastating. This portrayal of, how can I describe it? Government, like the man, the system feigning empathy. Perforced empathy to present themselves as human when they're only in it for their own gain.
And
the core theme came through so effectively that I'm like nearly in tears reading this because I'd never even conceived of it before. And you want that moment in a game. You want that moment where you suddenly get it and you can push past everything that you don't like and everything that's flawed about it and the whole soul of the damn thing intersects with yours. And it's happened to me before. Yeah. It's happened to me with games I formerly absolutely despised that I went back to later and went, oh shit, I get this now. And I want that for Ocarina. And I honestly think there will be a time in the future where I come to that game and I get it and I'm able to overcome everything I don't like about it. But I think I stabbed my chances of that in the back by playing Ship of Harkinian when I should have just played the original.
Maybe, although I have this exact same problem with Deus Ex. I've tried so hard to enjoy the original Deus Ex because I know so much about, like people have told me about, not, and I don't just mean people going on too much about it and they've put me off. They put me on. Like the things people have described about it are like, yes, that sounds great. And I just can't do it. I just don't enjoy it.
I've had a few days of sex myself.
But I do feel like one day it'll happen, and I'll get there.
Yeah, you'll have a day of sex one day.
Thank you. I hope so.
No, that's a good example though, because Deus Ex is a game I had that exact experience with. I didn't get it, and then I suddenly did. I reached a point where I understood the systems, I understood how it worked, I understood what the game expected of me.
Yeah.
But with Ocarina, I remember very near the end of the game being in a room where the solution to the puzzle was to guide a living statue onto a switch and then hitting the statue so it would stop on the switch and it would leave the door open I needed to exit through. and the Switch is about a tile away from the wall. There are at least three other living statues there where if you touch them, they will also pursue you. And I'm juggling this quite small room with a quite bad camera with the Z targeting system, which, while revolutionary at the time, is quite clunky. Trying to get this thing onto a Switch, which I can't see because the camera won't let me. And I'm also being pursued by other obstacles at the same time. And I'm sitting there thinking, I have never hated anything in my life as much as I hate this room. And I wish I couldn't. I wish I could get over it. I wanted this to kind of be a breezy one, so I want to come to some conclusions here. But the main thing I want to once again hammer down is, by saying that, I do not want to condemn Ocarina of Time as I think this is bad. What I think is, this has gone far beyond just being a game. It's like something like Final Fantasy VII. Although Final Fantasy VII is so regimented and isometric and effectively linear that it's much easier to play than Ocarina of Time is. Final Fantasy VII was an extrapolation of what they were already doing, and Ocarina of Time was just completely new. And it's still quite singular. Obviously, there is Majora's Mask, but from the brief amount of Majora's Mask I've played, it's a much more polished and different experience. So, I don't know, where do we leave it with Ocarina? What can you say about Ocarina now? I guess don't stream it if you haven't played it before.
Well, not just Ocarina. This is something to think about overall. You do have to, if there's a game that you have heard is about atmosphere, because don't forget, when one of the things we need to know about Parliament, about old games generally, is that you said earlier you would never have thought of that in A Month of Sundays.
Never.
Mm. Well, you might have, because that's how we used to play games back then, is we used to, every Sunday, we used to spend hours just tooling around in games. And now we expect to get the answer to something within half an hour of encouraging it, of encountering it. Otherwise, we go crazy. We get so angry about it, don't we?
I mean, it's like you say, in a modern game, you would have had someone pop up and say, hey, what about this? I mean, even Wind Waker has a guy who pops up and says, hey, what about this? Yeah. I mean, obviously you've got Navi in Ocarina, but Navi's useless.
Navi's incredibly oblique, yes, and sometimes just misses the point. But the thing for me is that I think the fundamental difference is that when I was a little kid back in Compton playing Ocarina of Time for the first time, I was doing it for, and I don't think this phrase has ever been used quite so literally, the sheer love of the game.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was a new game. I had nothing else to do.
Yep.
Nowadays, when I go back and play a classic, it's not because that I haven't played before. It's not because of the sheer love of the game. It's because I've got a backlog and I sort of feel obligated to tick this off my backlog. Mm. And there's such a huge fundamental difference in mindset there. Like this is something that I think a lot of people encounter with the original Zelda, Zelda 1, is it's like, oh, how are you meant to figure this out? And it's like, well, because you are meant to spend weeks with a community bashing your head off it, trying so many different things. That's how you're supposed to figure it out. You're not just supposed to sit there and the second something like causes a little bit of friction, you just immediately go to a guide on your other monitor, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And even bearing that in mind, like, I'm capable of playing old games. I play a lot of old games, obviously, and I have no real issue with going, oh yeah, it's just like this. So for me, I think it is that, I really think it, there is so much in that disconnect between the actual experience of the game and its gameplay and the fact that it is running so well, looking so good in a source port, in a decompilation. I honestly feel like that was my major mistake. I should have just played the original. I should always just have played the original because I ruined it by playing it differently and wrong.
Honestly,
and that's not, and this is, and again, Ship of Harkinian, amazing.
Yeah, of course.
Amazing piece of work. But for me personally, a mistake. A huge mistake. The worst mistake that I made. Not ever. I've made loads of way worse mistakes, but like that for this specific game. Oh, mate, you would not believe the extent to which I have fucked up before.
No, I think that's an interesting point, and it's something that I struggle with a lot. I remember I didn't play Devil May Cry 3 for, 2 years because I was immobilized by which version to play.
Yeah. Oh, hell yeah. Yeah.
It's like, because there were so many versions. You know what? I don't even need to go back that far. I'm not playing Ninja Gaiden right now. I've got them bought. I've got them installed. They're on Steam. Mm-hmm. But I've heard that, the versions there are not the best versions and that you should, the best one is Ninja Gaiden Black, which was on the Xbox original or something like that. And I'm, immobilized by that. I don't know what the fuck to do with that because I don't have an original Xbox.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that, I think that is something that we're having to contend with a lot nowadays, is that, which version of the game do you play? Like, for example, if you played the original Switch release of Ocarina of Time when it was on NSO, you'd be getting a really janky version of that game. Like, a lot of the effects did not work. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of little bugs and glitches and problems with it, right?
Yeah.
If you go to emulate it, maybe you encounter new inconsistencies.
Yeah.
Maybe you get it. Maybe it's the opposite way around. Maybe you get a lot, like you're saying, Stu, maybe it's a lot smoother and that feels weird. The other thing is that if you're playing it on an emulator, do you have a USB N64 controller? Because I've got to be honest, it's like that game's kind of made for that controller.
100%.
It is why I have I've softened my stance so much on how many remakes there are nowadays because it's a complete no-win situation. A lot of these games are being made bespoke for specific hardware and it's so difficult to even port them. The best you can do is emulate them. But whatever you do, you are introducing tiny little inconsistencies and problems that didn't exist in the original release.
Yeah, and then those of us who remember the original release of things have to put up with people forming their opinion of the game and doing video essays about something that isn't true.
I thought, ultimately, because I'm going to wrap this up if that's all right, keep it breezy, put some music in there, bash it out, double space, turn it in. You know? I just wanted a breezy episode because I wanted to get a little roundtable going about this because I think that it's something that doesn't get talked about that much when it comes to retro gaming in such detail. And I guess the ultimate advice I would give anyone, if you are playing Ocarina for the first time, here's what I advise you do. One, just pick a version and stick with it. Don't ask people what version to play. Don't listen to people who try and tell you. And I apply this to most retro games. Just play the original by whatever means you can. It doesn't matter if it's not on a CRT. It doesn't matter what controller you use, as long as it works for you. You know? Find your way of playing and just play it and don't fucking listen to anyone.
Absolutely. Look for recommendations, right? Before you've played it, you don't know. So I would advise looking for recommendations from people that you know and trust. But don't listen to strangers on the internet because they will tell you 800 different things without knowing a thing about anything.
And the really, this is the difficult thing to penetrate. You also shouldn't really listen to the game's biggest fans because they're the people who do the gaming equivalent of, you know, when someone who loves a TV series and they say, skip the first three seasons because it gets good after that.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
But you watched them. That's why you loved it. So shut up.
This is like, the one for me is JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. Uh-huh. There's so many chat. Oh, where do you start with JoJo's Bizarre Adventure? You start at part one and then you do part two.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. Part one's a little shaky. If you are halfway through part two and you are like, I hate this, you just maybe don't like JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. It's not like a weird conspiracy.
Yeah.
But I think you're exactly right. Don't listen to the biggest fans. And I say, I'm going to use myself as an example here. Uh-huh. Don't listen to anything I say about Metroid.
Never. Never listen to him about anything.
Never listen to me about anything that I say about Metroid, because I am fucking insufferable.
Me too.
About Metroid.
Chris McFeely, sorry, my co-host on my podcast.
Sorry, were you guys saying something?
Had a go at me once because someone asked, like, what order should I play the Metroid games in? And I gave them my honest response, and it's a ludicrous, like, first you got to buy this hardware, then you got to do this. Yeah.
Now, this is something I want to make clear again, is in saying this, I don't condemn anyone who does this. I do this with Sonic.
Yeah.
We've done five episodes about Sonic 3 and Knuckles.
Of course.
That's what happens when someone asks me about Sonic. I talk for 10 hours.
This is me. The call is coming from inside the house.
Yeah, we're talking about ourselves here. We are. The trouble is, what do you do? Because you can't listen to fans. The reason you can't listen to fans, and the reason why I brought up the thing about the just skip the first three seasons, is that they've played it every possible way, and so their opinion of the best way is based on having done that. And it's the best way for people who've done that, like we said much earlier in the episode.
And if
they don't know. They don't know how you should play it, but they do know it's you should play it on the original one, but that's not feasible.
And Ocarina of Time and all culture and all media have never existed in a vacuum. You described yourself. Mm. Ocarina of Time came to you with the hype of this is going to be the best game ever.
Yep.
This is going to be everything. It came to Shami with the knowledge this exists. This you weren't in that orbit, and that was probably the ideal place to play it, Shami. Mm-hmm. With that.
Yeah.
I came to it with the, this is the best thing ever, this is the best game ever, for 20 years of hindsight and cynicism.
Yeah.
And I played it in the worst possible way I could have played it. And I guess all I wanted to get across here really is retro gaming is fraught with stuff like this.
Yeah.
All gaming is, but if it's an old game and people have memories attached to the game and people have experiences attached to that game, they do not want those experiences to be betrayed.
Are you making the conclusion that people shouldn't listen to retro gaming podcasts?
I think that basically what I've done today is I've completely broken Retronauts. It's over. No, that's the thing. It's not, oh God, I'm fucked, aren't I? I've absolutely fucked myself. Well, it's been real, guys. It's been a lot of fun presenting Retronauts. But no, it's not that. It's not that. It's a state of discourse versus a state of knowledge and expression of opinion. This is us being friends talking about this game, okay? That is different. It is different. It's not the same. Don't say it's the same, because my career and life ride on this. But it's impossible to draw a conclusion, because nobody can do this. It's impossible to approach that game with a fresh mind, with no baggage. It's not possible unless you are a baby.
Yeah.
Well, Which, of course, you all are. But
culturally, in the game's culture, such as it is, it's kind of like a bloody cell culture in a petri dish. We are so resistant to anything that goes against the prevailing discourse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I have to be honest, there's a lot of stuff that I instinctively know just don't say that.
Yeah.
Just even if I feel a particular... Like, for example, again, recently we were talking about Outer Wilds.
Yeah.
There's a few things in that game that I thought weren't effective. Yeah. Well, there's one actually, no, there's one thing in that game that I thought was not effective. Mm-hmm. And yet I just don't bring it up.
Yeah.
Even though I think it would like make for a really interesting conversation, because I don't want to tweet about it. I don't want to talk about it, because a lot of people, I think, would like
descend on you.
Yes, descend on. And of course, I know that a lot of people as well would have a genuine good faith discussion with me. But it's kind of a combination of me going, I don't want to be a misery guts.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to yuck people's yum, but also knowing, right, there is going to be so much resistance to anything that I say here. Mm-hmm. And it's so strange because people are so like, oh, we should respect other people's opinions. That's like such a basic thing that we learn when we are children. And yet people seem pathologically incapable of doing it. There are so many times that I have said, yeah, oh, I don't like something that is popular, or I like something that is unpopular. And the response is like, what?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we've talked about it before. I mean, I think it's the sort of application of sort of social media justice, because, you know, getting away from video games for a second. God, I wanted to wrap this up, but now I'm going to go on a full one. Going away from video games briefly to make the point is social media discourse is in... all opinions are respected, except obviously we don't respect fascist opinions. We don't respect bigoted opinions. We don't respect hateful opinions. We don't respect them. And those, those good qualities of not tolerating these things, of ridiculing these things, those same parameters are brought into discussion of other things.
Yeah.
So when you talk about video games and you don't say the right opinion, you get the ridicule, you get the scorn of the same level.
Well, the trouble
not with
is,
the same a target. Not the the target is different, but the tactics are the same. And
the
that
trouble
is troubling to me.
That a really good video game Sonic the Hedgehog is an immersive experience.
Sorry, I thought you were just asking for a really good video game. Yeah.
Which is supposed to, if it's made well, is supposed to envelop you in this experience that you're having, and ideally it will be really, really good. And some of them are, and some of them do in fact change your life or form an important moment in your life. And so when you see, and if you are inflicted with nerdness, and you see someone about to just not quite get that experience right, there's a panic that like, no, wait, I have to help you. And that's when it all comes out. And that's so it's not necessarily that the advice you're going to get is wrong, but it's going to be frantic and panicked. And a lot of us are just not clever enough
to
properly put across what we need to say.
And I need to stress how much that this is me as well, because I am not good at navigating this. But I think a lot of it comes from a place of insecurity. And I'm trying to just be fine with like... You know, if somebody says something about Metroid, if somebody says something about like one of the ones was like Metroid Dread, where she's like this totally badass, cool guys don't look at explosions character.
Mm.
And that doesn't ring true. That's not Samus for me. But like, I'm trying to be okay when people say that, not to go off on one. because that is insecurity on my part. That is like, wait, what if my version of Samus that I've had in my head since I was a kid is not real and not right? That's not the right one.
That insecurity, yes, it carries over to me playing Ocarina of Time now with the baggage that it has, and me thinking when I fail, when I don't enjoy it, when I struggle with it, me thinking, oh my God, I mean, I just suck. Yeah. I'm
awful.
My
God. No, mate, literally, I was talking to you about this yesterday when we were playing that. Like, me and my friends were playing that Fortnite festival. It's Guitar Hero, basically.
Yeah, right? I know. Yeah, I've played it. It's the best game ever made. Yeah.
No, for people who don't know.
Sorry.
And the thing was, is these guys were all cranking out, like, 5 stars on hard mode, and I was, like, doing shit on, like, easy and medium.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh my God, I used to be a drummer. Like, what is wrong with me? Am I an idiot?
Yeah. That fact is, I mean, that's factoring it back to Ocarina, that I'm feeling that constantly, not just because it's on a stream, but because you have this weight of expectation around you and of the game and your experience with the game.
And that
I
is,
think it, I just think
and that is personal insecurity. That is not, because nobody else gives a shit, I feel like. Nobody else minds. No. Like, you're allowed to be bad at games. Nobody cares. And I know that rationally that that is true. But sometimes the worm gets stuck in your brain and that's it. You are now this creature of instinct, just like defensively snapping at people.
Yeah, because that's me one, and me thinking as well with Ocarina, getting defensive because it's like, the impulse to say, well, this is badly designed.
Yes, yes, because I want to, like, I want to activate, you know, I have a YouTube channel, don't you know? You know, and I want to kind of go like, oh, well, actually, here's why, like, so therefore, if I'm having a bad experience, because I'm a capital G gamer, I've said many slurs. You know, like, if I'm having a bad experience,
I want to point out at this moment that Shami hasn't said many slurs. That was a
joke.
I'm sorry, I had to ruin the joke just for the sake of legal decency.
But you know, I'm supposed to be. This is what I do. I'm supposed to be good at games. So therefore, there must be a problem with the game. Mm-hmm. And again, that's complete insecurity. Souls, like Dark Souls, FromSoft games. Exact same case there. Like, you know, there's a lot of insecurity, I think, on both sides with, like, getting people in the door. There's a lot of, like, kind of, there's a lot of that exact same franticness getting somebody in the door there. But there's also that same defensiveness. If they don't like it, get good, skill issue, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also defensiveness from me. This is why I keep wanting to go back to Elden Ring, even though I put 250 hours into it, even though I completed it all the way through all the bosses twice, and even though I really, really did not enjoy myself with it, I keep wanting to go back to it because it's like that little kernel of insecurity. Like, oh my God, what if I do need to get good? What if I'm just not good enough? You know, like, I beat Melania twice, for goodness sake.
I completely get it, and it does factor into everything, and that's, I suppose that's the conclusion here, is like, how can you play a game and have the intended experience ever now? Like, you can't. Yeah. You just can't do it. And I guess that's what I wanted to get into the root of, and I'm pretty pleased with this. I think this has been quite good. And I'm especially taken, and I'm sorry, I'm not saying winner of best opinion award here, but I'm very taken with your literature comparison, Dave. I think that's spot on. Well done, Dave.
Thank you.
You did very well as well. You did very well.
Thank you.
And I was fine. I was okay. But this is, I hope that you've enjoyed this. I know it's been a rambling sort of roundtable thing we don't normally do, but I think it's a conversation that is of interest. So it won't happen again, I promise. But I will be getting Dave and Shay back, for more episodes because I love them very much. And I think they're very clever and wise.
Love you too, man.
Thank you. And I noticed that Dave didn't say it. Okay.
Well, I mean, you're all right.
Yeah, you are. But this has been Retronauts, and I would like to know where people can find us on the internet. So, Dave, where can people find you? As if they don't know already, as I always say.
Well, exactly, yeah. Demon Tomato Dave on the socials, .bsky.social. Have a look for me there. But I've got a YouTube channel, Demon Tomato Dave. You might find some things you like there. But most of my work at the moment goes on to Sonic the Comic, the podcast, which you'll find at stctp.zone, where we read the old British Sonic comics that actually followed the retro games. Well, they weren't retro games then. They were just games, but for some reason, ours was the only comic or spin-off of any sort that seemed to actually acknowledge that Sonic had a world already and didn't need to make up a new one. So we go through all of that, and we're actually entering the sort of the end years of that where we can track as its funding is gradually cut piece by piece, and there's an interesting curve to that going on at the moment. Anyway, listen to Sonic the Comic, the podcast.
Yeah, there we go. Okay. And Shimmy, Do you have like a YouTube presence or anything?
I have. Yeah, you can find me on YouTube. If you type in Shoogles or you type in 11-hour Pokemon, you'll find me. I'm also on Blue Sky. That's shoogles.bsky.social. And all the rest is there. I'm kind of between projects right now. I'm kind of like taking a little bit of a sabbatical from YouTube. So stay tuned to see if I ever decide what I'm doing with my life.
Stay tuned, or should we say shay tuned? No, we shouldn't say that.
Say that.
Incidentally, for the record, I might actually get y'all back soon because I've been playing Pokemon lately quite a lot. And I think there's an episode in that that's actually sort of along the lines of how the modding games have shaved the edges off. But that's a teaser. We'll get to that maybe if there's any interest in actually doing that from the both of you, because I don't want to force the issue. But I'm sure, Jip, you know me and you know Retronauts because you're listening to it right now. And for a mere $5 on the Retronauts Patreon, you can get not only early access to each week's episode, but also bonus episodes, two bonus episodes per month, completely exclusive to the Patreon and are extremely good as well. And you'll also be getting Diamond Fights, very good this week in Retro Column, which is also presented in podcast form if you don't like looking at words on the screen. And let's face it, who does? There are also other benefits, like you can come in the Discord and you can call me all names you want and I'm not allowed to retaliate. That's one of the explicit rules of the Discord. Stuart Jip is here to be abused. I made that up. It's not true. But you can do it. I wouldn't mind. And there are many other benefits, which, quite frankly, I can't remember. But it's really good. And it's only $5. And you get a ton of podcasts. And they're tremendous podcasts, like this one, which you've just listened to, which has been a solid 90 minutes of pure introspection. So thank you very much for listening. And we will return and talk about other things, possibly Pokemon, more than likely Sonic. Who knows? Maybe we'll throw a curveball and do a Radical Rex episode for 2.5 hours. We'll see.
I don't want to talk about Sonic, man.
You don't want to talk about Sonic?
Nah.
That's fair enough.
Little blue bastard like ruined my life.
We've done all the... Yeah, he's a little shit, isn't he?
Yeah.
You know what? So are we all. What are we if not just muck and the feet of God? Which is scraping off on his godly porch guy, for Christ's
Once
sake.
Once again, I feel like the conclusion of this episode is that we're all very depressed and insecure.
Yeah, so stay tuned for Amphetronauts, where we all cut on the amphetamines. take care, everyone, and goodbye. Thank you.
Bye.
Stop before you say something you might regret. Why are we always fighting on the internet? Fandom starts with love. There's no need to shove. Surely we can disagree and still both be fans of stuff. We're here for fun and games, but let friendship quench those flame wars. So you're even though you're wrong, I know we'll still be friends, whatever you think about us. Arena of Time. Arena of Time.
But it is worth mentioning. There'll be some people who are like, mention it.
When I've come, that we're back.
Yeah, you did. I was in the middle of a point there, and you just said, I'm sorry. Go on, say it. What?
No, you go ahead, because I'll set my thing can come at the end. It's fine. My thing can come at the end.
Oh,
no, it never stops.
Me, Stuart.
Oh, my God.
Something that people will be fizzing for.
I love to ejaculate.
yeah, it's cracking, isn't it?